WMFO Medford 91.5. Today is Thursday, May 27th. The time is 10 p.m. and the feeling is right. Tonight I have another sci-fi short for you. Sometimes I read these and I realize by the time I'm done reading them that they're unsatisfactory. And to be honest, I'm a little on the fence about tonight. Not because it's a bad story. I think it's a compelling story. But I was hoping to find something a little more feminist. We're reading a story called When I Was Miss Dow, a short story written by Sonia Dorman, published in the June 1966 issue of Galaxy Science Fiction. And I think there's still lots and lots to enjoy about this story, particularly if you were a fan of the character Odo in the Star Trek series Deep Space Nine from the 90s, the 1990s, then you might like this story. Let's get into it.
Hungry, mother-haunted people come and find us living in what they like to call crystal palaces. Though really, we live in glass palaces, some of them highly ornamented, and others plain as paper. They came first as explorers, and perhaps realize we are a race of one sex only, rather amorphous beings of proteid, and we, even Baby and I, are protean. Also, being able to take various shapes at will. One sex, one brain lobe. We live in more or less glass bridges over the humanoid chasm, eating, recreating, attending races, and playing other games like most living creatures. Eventually, we're all dumped into the cell banks and reproduced once more. After the explorers comes the colony of miners and scientists. The warden and some of the other elders put on faces to greet them, agreeing to help with the mining of some new ores, even giving them a kuta or two as they become interested in our racing dogs. They set up our places of life, pop up their machines, bang bang, chug chug. We put on our faces, forms, smiles, and costumes. I am old enough to learn to change my shape too. The warden says to me, "It's about time you made a change yourself. Some of your friends are already working for these people, bringing home credits and sulfas." My uncle, by the warden's fourth conjunction, made himself over at the start, being one of the first to realize how it could profit us. I protest to the warden. "I'm educated and trained as a scholar. You always say I must remain deep in my mathematics and other studies." My uncle says, "You have to do it. There's only one way for us to get along with them." And he runs his fingers through his long blonde hair. My uncle's not an educated person, but highly placed politically. And while Captain Dow is around, my uncle retains this particular shape. The captain is shipping out soon, then uncle will find some other feature. Because he's already warned that it's unseemly for him to be chasing around in the face of a girl after the half-bearded boys from the spaceships. I don't want to do this myself, wasting so much time, when the 14 decimals even now are clicking on my mirrors. The warden says, "We have a pattern from a female botanist. She ought to do for you. But before we put you into the pattern tank, you'll have to approximate another brain lobe. They have two." "I know," I said sulkily. "A botanist. A she." "Into the tank," the warden says to me without mercy, and I am his to use as he believes proper. I spend 4 days in the tank, absorbing the female Terran pattern. When I'm released, the warden tells me, "Your job is waiting for you. We went to a lot of trouble to arrange it." He sounds brusque, but perhaps this is because he hasn't conjoined for a long time. The responsibility of being warden of mines and seeds comes first, long before any social engagement. I run my fingers through my brunette curls and notice my uncle is looking critically at me. "Haven't you made yourself rather old?" he asks. "Oh, he's all right," the warden says. 33 isn't badly matched to the doctor, as I understand it. Dr. Arnold Proctor, the colony's head biologist, is busy making radiograph pictures with his primitive x-rays and of skeletal structures. Murger birds, rodents, and our pets and racers, the kutas. Dogs to the Terrans, who are fascinated by them. We breed them primarily for speed and stamina, but some of them carry a gene for an inherited structural defect which cripples them, and they have to be destroyed before they are fully grown. The doctor is making a special study of kutas. He gets up from his chair when I enter his office. "I'm Miss Dow, your new assistant," I say, hoping my long fingernails will stand up to the pressure of punch keys on the computer, since I haven't made much practice in retaining foreign shapes. I'm still in uncertain balance between myself and Martha Dow, who is also myself. But one does not have two lobes for nothing, I discover. "Good morning. I'm glad you're here," the doctor says. He is a nice pink man, with silver hair, soft-spoken, intelligent. I'm pleased, as we work along, to find that he doesn't joke and wisecrack like so many of the Terrans, though I am sometimes whimsical. I like music and banquets, as well as my studies. Though absorbed in his work, Dr. Proctor isn't rude to interrupters. A man of unusual balance, coming as he does from a culture which sends out scientific parties that are 90% of one sex when their species provides them two. At first meetings, he is dedicated but agreeable, and I'm charmed. "Dr. Proctor," I ask him one morning, "is it possible for you to radiograph my kuta? She's very fine, from the fastest stock available, and I'd like to breed her." Yes, yes, of course, he promises with his quick, often absent smile. By all means. You wish to breed only the best. It's typical of him to assume we're all as dedicated as he. My uncle's not pleased. There's nothing wrong with your Kuta, he says. What do you want to x-ray her for? Suppose he finds something is wrong. You'll be afraid to race or breed her, and she won't be replaced. Besides, your interest in her may make him suspicious. Suspicious of what? I ask. But my uncle won't say, so I ask him, suppose she's bred and her pups are cripples? The warden says, you're supposed to have your mind on your work, not on racing. The Kuta was just to amuse you when you were younger. I lean down and stroke her head, which is beautiful, and she breathes a deep and gentle breath in response. Oh, let him go, my uncle says wearily. He's getting disgusted because they didn't intend for me to bury myself in a laboratory or a computer room without making more important contacts. But a scholar is born with a certain temperament and has an introspective nature. And as I'm destined to eventually replace the warden, naturally, I prefer the life of the mind. I must say, my uncle remarks, you look the image of a Terran female. Is the work interesting? Oh yes, fascinating, I reply, and he snorts at my lie, since we both know it's dull and routine, and most of the time is spent working out the connections between my two brain lobes, which still present me with some difficulty. My Kuta bitch is subjected to a pelvic radiograph. Afterward, I stand on my heels in the small darkened cubicle, looking at the film on the viewing screen. There he stands too, with his cheekbones emerald in the peculiar light, and his hair, which is silver in daylight, looks phosphorescent. I resist this. I am resisting this doctor with the x-ray eyes who can examine my marrow with ease. He sees Martha's marrow, every perfect corpuscle of it. You can't imagine how comforting it is to be so transparent. There's no need to pretend, adjust, advance, retreat, or discuss the oddities of my planet. We are looking at the x-ray film of my prized racer and companion to determine the soundness of her hip joints. Yet I suspect the doctor, platinum green and tall as a tower, is piercing my reality with his educated gaze. He can see the blood flushing my surfaces. I don't need to do a thing but stand up straight so the crease of fat at my waist doesn't distort my belly button, the center of it all. You see? He says. I do see, looking at the film in the darkness where perfection or disaster may be viewed, and I'm twined in the paradox which confronts me here. The darker the room, the brighter the screen, and the clearer the picture. Less light, and the truth becomes more evident. Either the Kuta is properly jointed and may be bred without danger of passing the gene onto her young, or she is not properly jointed and cannot be used. Less light, more truth. And the doctor is green sculpture, a little darker, and he would be bronze. But his natural color is pink alabaster. You see, the doctor says, and I do try to see. He points his wax pencil at one hip joint on the film and says, a certain amount of osteoarthritic buildup is already evident. The cranial rim is wearing down. She may go lame. She'll certainly pass the defect on to some of her pups, if she's bred. This Kuta has been my playmate and friend for a long time. She retains a single form, that of Kuta. Full of love and beautiful speed, she has been a source of pleasure and pride. Dr. Proctor of the Pewter Hare will discuss the anatomical defects of the Kuta in a gentle and cultivated voice. I am disturbed. There shouldn't be any need to explain the truth, which is evident. Yet it seems that to comprehend the exposures, I require a special education. It's said that the more you have seen, the quicker you are to sort the eternal verities into one pile and the dismal illusions into another. How is it that sometimes the doctor wears a head which resembles that of a Kuta, with a splendid muzzle and noble brow? Suddenly, he gives a little laugh and points the end of the wax pencil at my navel, announcing, "There, there. It is essential that the belly button be attached onto the pelvis, or you'll bear no children." Thoughts of offspring had occurred to me. But weren't we discussing my racer? The radiograph film is still clipped to the view screen, and upon it, spread-eagled, appeared the bony Rorschach of my Kuta bitch, her hip joints expressing doom. I wish the doctor would put on the daylight. I come to the conclusion that there's a limit of how much truth I can examine, and the more I submit to the conditions necessary for examining it, the more unhappy I become.
One day, the track that you're climbing gets steep. Your emotions are frayed and your nerves are starting to creep. Just remember the days, as long as the time that you keep. Brother, you better watch out for the skin deep. Better watch out for the skin deep. Better watch out for the skin deep. Brother, watch out.
Dr. Proctor is a man of such perfect integrity that he continues to talk about bones and muscles until I'm ready to scream for mercy. He has done something that is unusual and probably prohibited, but he's not aware of it. I mean, it must be prohibited in his culture, where it seems they play on each other, but not with each other. I am uneasy, fluctuating. He snaps two switches. Out goes the film, and on goes the sun, making my eyes stream with sensitive and grateful tears. Although he's so adjusted to these contrasts, he doesn't so much as blink. Floating in the sunshine, I've become opaque. He can't see anything but my surface tensions, and I wonder what he does in his spare time. A part of me seems to tilt or slide. "There, there. Oh, dear, Miss Dow," he says, patting my back, rubbing my shoulder blades. His forearms and fingers extend gingerly. "You do want to breed only the best, don't you?" he asks. I begin within me a compulsive ritual of counting the elements. It's all I can do to keep communications open between my brain lobes. I'm suffering from eclipses. One goes dark, the other lights up. That one goes dark, the other goes nova. "There, there," the doctor says, distressed because I'm quivering and trying to keep the connections open. I have never felt so clogged before. They may have to put me back into the pattern tank. Profoundly disturbed, I lift my face, and he gives me a kiss.
Oh, the night.
Then I'm all right, balanced again. One lobe composing a concerto for my vertex flute, the other one projecting. Oh, Arnie. Oh, Arnie. Yes, I'm okay for the shape I'm in. He's marking my joints with his wax pencil, the marks of which can easily be erased from the film surface. And he's mumbling, "It's essential. Oh, yes, it's essential." Finally, he says, "I guess all of us colonists are lonely here." And I say, "Oh yes, aren't we?" Before I realize the enormity of Warden's manipulations and what a lot I have to learn. Evidently, the Warden triple carded me through the colony punch center as Terran. I lie and say, "Oh yes, yes, yes. Oh Arnie, put on the light. For we may find some more truth." "Not here," Arnie says. And of course he's right. This is a room for study, for cataloging obvious facts. Not a place for carnival. There are not many places for it, I discover with surprise. Having lived in glass all my life, I expect everyone else to be as comfortable there as I am. But this isn't so. Just the same, we find his quarters, after dark, to be comfortable and free of embarrassment. You wouldn't think a dedicated man of his age would be so vigorous. But I find out he spends his weekends at the recreation center hitting a ball with his hand. The ball bounces back off a wall, and he hits it, and hits it. Though he's given that up now, because we're together on weekends. "You're more than an old bachelor like me deserves," he tells me. "Why are you an old bachelor?" I ask him. I do wonder why, if it's something not to be. He tries to explain it to me. "I'm not a young man. I wouldn't make a good husband, I'm afraid. I like to work late, to be undisturbed. In my leisure time, I like to make wood carvings. Sometimes I go to bed with the sun, and sometimes I'm up working all night. And then children. No. I'm lucky to be an old bachelor," he says.
You're a man, you are only a boy. Long live Vaso and the Leans. After that, La Femme, Si Un Jour, French 79, Between the Buttons, Nils Fromm, Keep, The Stranglers, Skin Deep. Computer Magic, now known as Don CM, covering Self-Control, a true classic. And just now, Magnetic Fields, playing Suddenly There Is a Tidal Wave. That song always makes me think of Matapari. You're listening to A Thunder Perfect Mood on WMFO 91.5. I am Marie Moon, your host. And we are reading the 1966 short story, When I Was Miss Dow, by Sonia Dorman.
Arnie carves kaku wood, which has a brilliant grain and is soft enough to permit easy carving. He's working on a figure of a murger bird, whittling lengthwise down the wood so the grain, wavy, full of flowing wedge-shaped lines, will represent the feathers. The lamplight shines on his hair and the crinkle of his eyelids as he looks down and carves, whittles, turns. He's absorbed in what he doesn't see there, but he's projecting what he wants to see. It's the reverse of what he must do in the viewing room. I begin to suffer a peculiar pain located in the nerve cluster between my lungs. He's not talking to me. He's not caressing me. He's forgotten I'm here, and like a false projection, I'm beginning to fade. In another hour, perhaps, the film will become blank. If he doesn't see me, then am I here? He's doing just what I do when I'm absorbed in one of my own projects. And I admire the intensity with which he works. It's magnificent. Yes, I'm jealous of it. I burn with rage and jealousy. He has abandoned me to be Martha, and I wish I were myself again, free in shape and single in mind. Not this sack of mud clinging to another. Yet he's teaching me that it's good to cling to another. I'm exhausted from strange disciplines. Perhaps he's tired too. I see that sometimes he kneads the muscles of his stomach with his hands and closes his eyes. The warden sits me down one of my rare evenings home and talks angrily. "You're making a mistake," he says. "If the doctor finds out who you are, you'll lose your job with the colony. Besides, we never supposed you'd have a liaison with only one man. You were supposed to start with the doctor and then go on from there. We need every credit you can bring in. And by the way, you haven't done well on that score lately. Is he stingy?" "Of course he isn't. But all you bring home in credits is your pay." I can think of no reply. It's true, the warden has a right to use me in whatever capacity would serve us all best, as I will use others when I'm a warden. But he and my uncle spend half the credits for my job on sulfadiazole, to which they've become addicted. "You've no sense of responsibility," the warden says. Perhaps he's coming close to time for conjunction again, and this makes him more concerned about my stability. My uncle says, "Oh, he's young, leave him alone, as long as he turns over most of those pay credits to us." Though what he uses the remainder for, I'll never know. I use it for clothes at the colony exchange. Sometimes Arnie takes me out for an evening, usually to the Laugh Tree Bar, where the space crews, too, like to relax. The bar is the place to find joy babies, young, pretty, planet-born girls who work at the Colony Punch Center during the day and spend their evenings here competing for the attention of the officers. Sitting here with Arnie, I can't distinguish a colonist's daughter from one of my friends or relatives. They wouldn't know me either. Once at home, I try to talk with a few of these friends about my feelings. But I discover that whatever female patterns they've borrowed are superficial ones. None of them bother to grow an extra lobe, but merely tuck the Terran pattern into a corner of their own for handy reference. They are, most of them, on sulfas, hard and shiny toys. They skip like pebbles over the surface of the colonists' lives. Then they go home, revert to their own free forms, and enjoy their mathematics, colors, compositions, and seedings. Why me? I demand of the warden. Why two lobes? Why me? We felt you'd be more efficient, he answers. And while you're here, which you seldom are these days, you'd better revert to the other shapes. Your particles may be damaged if you hold that woman form too long. You don't know, I'll hold it forever. If I'm damaged or dead, you'll put me into the cell banks, and you'll be amazed, astonished, terrified to discover that I come out complete, all Martha. I can't be changed. You little lump of protagon, my uncle mumbles bitterly. You'll never amount to anything. You'll never be a warden. Have you done any of your own work recently? I say, yes. I've done some crystal divisions and regrown them in non-established patterns. My uncle is in a bad mood. He's kicking sulfa, and his nerve tissue is addled. I'm wise to speak quietly to him, but he still grumbles. I can't understand why you like being a two-lobed pack of giggles. I couldn't wait to get out of it. And you were so dead set against it to begin with. Well, I have learned, I start to say, but I can't explain what it is I'm still learning and close my eyes. Part of it is that on the line between the darkness and the brightness, it's easiest to float. I've never wanted to practice only easy things. My balance is damaged. I never had to balance. It's not a term or concept that I understand even now at home in free form. Some impress of Martha's pattern lies on my own brain cells. I suspect it's permanent damage, which gives me joy. That's what I mean about not understanding it. I am taught to strive for perfection. How can I be pleased with this, which may be a catastrophe?
Thank you.
Arnie carves on a breadth of kaku wood, bringing out to the surface a seascape. Knots become clots of spray. A flaw becomes a wind-blown spoon. I want to be Martha. I'd like to go to the Laugh Tree with Arnie for a good time. I'd like to learn to play cards with him. You see what happens. Arnie is, in his own way, like my original self. And I hate that part of him, since I've given it up to be Martha. Martha makes him happy. She is chocolate to his appetite, pillow for his weariness. I turn for company to my Kuta. She is the color of morning. Her chest juts out like an axe blade. Her ribs spring up and back like wings. Her eyes are large and clear as she returns my gaze. Yet she's beyond hope. In a little time, she'll be lame. She cannot race anymore. She must not mother a litter. I turn to her, and she gazes back into my eyes, dreaming of speed and wind on the sandy beaches where she has run. Why don't you read some tapes? Arnie suggests to me, because I'm restless and I disturb him. The Kuta lies at my feet. I read tapes. Every evening in his quarters, Arnie carves, I read tapes, the broken racer lies at my feet. I pass through Terran history this way. When the clown tumbles into the tub, I laugh. Terran history is full of clowns and tubs. At first, it seems that that's all there is, but you learn to see beneath the comic costumes. While I float on the taut line, the horizon between light and dark where it's so easy, I begin to sense what is under the costumes. Staggering down the street dead drunk on a sunny afternoon with everyone laughing at you. Hiding under the veranda because you made blood come out of Pa's face. Kicking a man when he's in the gutter because you've been kicked and you have to pass it on. Tragedy is what one of the Terrans called being a poet in the body of a cockroach. Have you heard the rumor? Arnie asks, putting down the whittling tool. Have you heard that some of the personnel in Punch Center aren't really humans? Not really? I ask, putting away the tape. We have no tragedy. In my species, family relationships are based only on related gene patterns. They are finally dumped into the family bank, and a new relative is created from the old. It's one form of an ancient history multiplying itself, but it isn't tragic. The Kuta, her utility destroyed by a recessive gene, lies sleeping at my feet. Is this tragedy? But she is a single form. She can't regenerate a lost limb or exfoliate brain tissue. She can only return my gaze with her steadfast and affectionate one. What are they, then, I ask Arnie, if they're not human? The story is that the local life forms aren't really as we see them. They've put on faces like ours to deal with us, and some of them have filtered into personnel. Filtered, as if I were a virus. But they must be harmless, I say. No harm has come to anyone. We don't know that for a fact, Arnie replies. You look tired, I say, and he comes to me to be soothed, to be loved in his flesh, his single form, his search for the truth in darkness and the viewing cubicle. At present, he's doing studies of Murger birds. Their spinal cavities are large air-filled ovals, and their bone is extremely porous, which permits them to soar to great heights. The Kuta no longer races on the wind-blown beaches. She lies at our feet, looking into the distance. The wall must be transparent to her eyes. I feel that beyond it, she sees clearly how the racers go, down the long, bright curve of the sand in the morning sun. She sighs and lays her head down on her narrow, delicate paws. I look into the distance, too. Bright beaches and Arnie, carrying me from his ship. But he will not carry me again. Arnie says, I seem to be tired all the time. He puts his head on my breast. I don't think the food's agreeing with me lately. Do you suffer pains? I ask him curiously. Suffer, he mutters. What kind of nonsense is that with analgesics? No, I don't suffer. I just don't feel well. He's absorbed in Murger birds, cuckoo wood. He descends into the bottom of the dark and rises up like a rocket across the horizon into the thin clarity above which I float. I no longer dare to breathe. I'm afraid of disturbing everything. I do not want anything. His head lies gently on my breast, and I will not disturb him. Oh my God, Arnie says, and I know what it's come to, even before he begins to choke and his muscles leap, and although I hold him in my arms, I know his heart is choking on massive doses of blood. The brilliance fades from his eyes, and they begin to go dark while I tightly hold him. If he doesn't see me as he dies, will I be here?
Troubles in dreams, send them all away, put them in a bottle and across the seas they stay. Speak not of misfortune, speak not for holy death, crouching by the door. Writhe and sway to music's pain, searing with a sigh, caressed if with a lover's touch, for it shall be your bride. troubles and dreams. Send them all away. Put them in a bottle, and across the seas they'd stay.
I can feel under my fingers how rapidly his skin cools. I must put him down, here with his carvings and his papers, and I must go home. But I lift Arnie in my arms and call the Kuta, who gets up rather stiffly. It's long after dark, and I carry him slowly, carefully, home to what he called a crystal palace, where the warden and my uncle are teaching each other to play chess with a set some space captain gave them in exchange for seed crystals. They sit in a bloom of light, sparkling, their old brains bent over the chessmen, as I breathe open the door and carry Arnie in. First, my uncle gives me just a glance, but then another glance and a hard stare. "Is that the doctor?" he asks. I put Arnie down and hold one of his cold hands. "Warden," I say on my knees, at eye level with the chessboard and its carved men. "Warden, can you put him in one of the banks?" The warden turns to look at me as hard as my uncle. "You've become deranged trying to maintain two lobes," he says. "You cannot reconstitute or recreate a Terran by our methods, and you must know it." Over the edge," my uncle says, now a blonde, 6-foot hardy male Terran, often at the laugh tree with one of the joy babies. He enjoys life, his own or someone else's. "I have too, I suppose. Am I fading? I am really just one of Arnie's projections, a form on a screen in his mind. I am not really Martha, though I tried." "We can't have him here," the warden says. "You better get him out of here. You couldn't explain a corpse like that to the colonists if they came looking for him. They'll think we did something to him. It's nearly time for my next conjunction. Do you want your nephew to arrive in disgrace? The uncles will drain his bank." The warden gets up and comes over to me. He takes hold of my dark curls and pulls me to my feet. It hurts the physical me, which is Martha. "God knows, Arnie, I'm Martha, it seems to me." "Take him back to his quarters," the warden says to me, "and come back here immediately. I'll try to see you back to your own pattern, but it may be too late. In part, I blame myself, if you must know, so I will try." "Yes, yes," I want to say to him, "as I was, dedicated, free. Turn me back into myself. I never wanted to be anyone else, and now I don't know if I'm anyone at all." The light's gone from his eyes, and he doesn't see me or see anything, does he? I pick him up and breathe the door out and go back through the night to his quarters, where the lamp still burns. I'm going to leave him here, where he belongs. Before I go, I pick up the small carving of the Murger bird and take it with me, home to my glass bridge, where at the edge of the mirrors, the decimals are still clicking perfectly, clicking out known facts. An octagon can be reduced. The planet turns at such a degree on its axis. To see the truth, you must have light of some sort. But to see the light, you must have darkness of some sort. I can no longer float on the horizon between the two, because that horizon has disappeared. I've learned to descend and to rise and descend again.
Time!
I'm able to revert without help to my own free form, to reabsorb the extra brain tissue. The sun comes up and it's bright. The night comes down and it's dark. I'm becoming somber and a brilliant student. Even my uncle says I'll be a good warden when the time comes. The warden goes to conjunction. From the cell banks, a new nephew is lifted out. The kuta lies dreaming of races she has run in the wind. It is our life, and it goes on, like the life of other creatures.
The beating of our hearts is the only
MRI, and other radiology exams provide your doctor with important health information. While these exams are routine, they can also cause concern. Ease your fears by visiting radiologyinfo.org. You'll find over 245 descriptions of radiology procedures, exams, and treatments. Know what to expect and how to prepare by visiting radiologyinfo.org today. Produced by the Radiological Society of North America and the American College of Radiology.
Hello, good night. Thunder Perfect Mood, Murray Moon, WMFO Medford. We just listened to I Think We're Alone Now by Lenny Lovitch. Before that, Wrap Your Troubles in Dreams by Nico, Hot in the Heels of Love by Throbbing Gristle, Palais d'Amour by Belle Paré, Tomorrow is Already Here by Stereolab, Copy by The Plastics, and Sway Sway by Hainali. As always, if you would like to reach out, you may contact me on Twitter at MarieMoonWMFO or listen to old broadcasts on thunderperfectmood.com. I'm going to try something new in June, but I don't know what it will be. So stand by, continue to enjoy, and I will see you next week.
For a moment in time, and it seemed everlasting that you would always be mine.